We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations, Text 17. Jayan Gunar Avarajo Pyadite Sutanam.
Jayan Gunar Avarajo Pyadite Sutanam.
Lokan Vichakrama Imam Yadatadi Yagya.
Lokan Vichakrama Imam Yadatadi Yagya.
Shmam Vamanena Jagrahe Tripada Chalena. Yajnam rite pati charan prabhu bir dachalya.
Yajnam rite pati charan prabhu bir.
Translation. The Lord, although transcendental to all material modes, still surpassed all the qualities of the sons of Aditi, known as the Adityas. The Lord appeared as the youngest son of Aditi. And because he surpassed all the planets of the universe, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the pretense of asking for a measurement of 3 footsteps of land, he took away all the lands of Bali Maharaj. He asked simply, because without begging, no authority can take one's rightful possessions. He asked simply because without begging, no authority can take one's rightful possessions. Please repeat. The Lord, although transcendental to all material modes,
still surpassed
all the qualities of the sons of Aditi, known as the Adityas. The Lord appeared as the youngest son of Aditi. And because he surpassed
all the planets of the universe,
he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the pretense of asking for a measurement of 3 footsteps of land, he took away all the lands of Bali Maharaj. He asked simply because without begging, no authority can take one's rightful possession. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The history of Bali Maharaj and his charity to Vamanadeva is described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bali Maharaj conquered all the planets of the universe by rightful possession. A king can conquer other kings by strength, and such possession is considered to be rightful. So Bali Maharaj possessed all the lands of the universe, and he happened to be charitably disposed toward the Brahmanas. The Lord therefore pretended to be a beggar Brahman, and he asked Bali Maharaj for a measurement of 3 footsteps of land. The Lord, as the proprietor of everything, could take from Bali Maharaj all the land he possessed. But he did not do so,
because Bali Maharaj possessed all those lands by king's rights. When Bali Maharaj was asked by Lord Vamana for such small charity, Bali Maharaja's spiritual master, namely Sukracharya, objected to this proposal because he knew that Vamanadev was Vishnu himself, pretending to be a beggar. Bali Maharaj did not agree to abide by the order of his spiritual master when he understood that the beggar was Vishnu himself. And he at once agreed to give him in charity the land requested. By this agreement, Lord Vamana covered all the lands of the universe with his first two steps, and then asked Bali Maharaj where to place the third step. Bali Maharaj was very glad to receive the Lord's remaining step upon his head. And thus Bali Maharaj, instead of losing everything he possessed, was blessed by the Lord's becoming his constant companion and doorman. So, by giving everything to the cause of the Lord, one does not lose anything, but he gains everything that he could never otherwise expect. Translation again. Although the Lord, although transcendental to all material modes, still surpassed all the qualities of the sons of Aditi, known as the Adityas. The Lord appeared as the youngest son of Aditi, and because he surpassed all the planets of the universe, he is the supreme personality of Godhead. On the pretense of asking for a measurement of 3 footsteps of land, he took away all the lands of Bali Maharaj. He asked simply because without begging, no authority can take one's rightful possession. So today is the auspicious appearance day of Lord Vamana, Vamana Devadasi. And here, in one verse, in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Vamana Dev and Bali Maharaj is described. Bali Maharaj, by the blessings of the Brahmanas, had conquered the universe. Even the higher planetary systems of the demigods. And the demigods appealed to Lord Vishnu to save them. And thus the Lord appeared as Vamanadeva. Now the Lord can assume any form that he likes. And he chose a form that was just suitable for his purpose. He always does. For example, when the demon Hiranyaksha
had caused the Earth to fall from its orbit into the Garbhodak Ocean. The Lord took the form of a boar with a long snout that could lift up the universe from its fallen place, lift up the earth. Similarly, Lord Nrsimha, Lord Brahma had given so many benedictions to the demon Hiranyakashipu, the Lord had to assume a very special, extraordinary form in order to keep all of Brahma's boons intact and at the same time kill Hiranyakashipu. And thus he assumed the wonderful form of Nrsimha, half man and half lion. So here, the Lord's purpose was to reclaim the universe from Bali Maharaj and return it to the demigods. Bali Maharaj was born in the family of demons, daityas. And at the same time, although the Lord is the proprietor of everything, everything belongs to him, and although he's all-powerful, he could have taken away the universe that had been conquered by Bali Maharaj. But he chose not to, in order to uphold the religious principle of not taking by force the property owned by another. So even though he's God, he's actually the proprietor of everything in the ultimate sense. But in the immediate sense, Bali Maharaj had rightfully occupied the conquered territory of the universe. And the Lord did not want to take Bali's possessions by force. And so he assumed the form of a beggar, which was just appropriate for the situation, because Bali Maharaj was very favorably inclined to give in charity to Brahmanas. And it's by the Brahmins' blessings that he was successful. So Bali Maharaj, all the daityas, the demons, they also have a guru, Sukracharya. And Sukracharya had mystic powers. And he could understand that the dwarf Brahman, Vamana, was actually Vishnu himself. And he could see that Vamana would take everything away from Bali Maharaj. Now, what is the duty of a bona fide spiritual master? The duty of a bona fide spiritual master is to repeat the message of Krishna. Amara gyai guru hai tare desh, yare deke tare kaha Krishna padesh. And the ultimate instruction of Krishna is sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja, to surrender unto him. So when Sukracharya told Bali Maharaj, do not agree to give the charity to Vamana. He was actually going against the instruction of the Lord that we surrender to him. He was telling his disciple not to surrender to him, which means he was not acting as a bona fide spiritual master. To the contrary, he was acting as a demon. And why would he tell his disciple not to surrender everything to Vishnu? Because Sukracharya had some personal motivation. He was enjoying material facilities from Bali Maharaj. So he thought if Bali Maharaj surrenders everything to Vishnu, then he won't have anything left for me. So this is demonic. This is demonic. He instructed his disciple to go against Vishnu because he wanted to enjoy his disciple's property. This is abominable. And therefore we, you know, Mahiyashan Padarajo Bishekam Niskinchananam Navrinita Yavat. We should take shelter of a Vaishnav who's Niskinchana, who has no interest in material possessions. So, Bali Maharaj is described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that when his spiritual master told him not to agree to the proposal of Vamana, Bali Maharaj hesitated. He thought. He took some time to think. And Srila Prabhupada explains that he took some time to think because it was a very grave situation. It was a very grave situation because his spiritual master had ordered him not to surrender to Vishnu indirectly. And Bali Maharaj had already promised 3 steps of land to Vamana. So it was a very serious situation. Because to disobey the orders of the spiritual master is an offense. Under ordinary circumstances, it is an offense. And similarly, to break one's promise is also an offense. So, Bali was in a dilemma. How could he break his promise to Vishnu? But at the same time, how could he disobey the order of his spiritual master? So he paused to consider the situation. And in the end, he decided to keep his promise to Vishnu, to surrender everything to Vishnu, and to disobey the order of his spiritual master because he realized that his spiritual master was not bona fide. He wasn't a real spiritual master. There is a verse in the 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Guru Nasasyat, that no one should become a guru or a father or a mother or a husband or any superior, worshipable personality. Unless he can deliver his or her dependents from the cycle of birth and death. That is the duty of the guru and the father and the mother and the husband. Now, in his commentary to this verse, Srila Prabhupada quotes Sridhar Swami, the original commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, Srila Prabhupada quoted Sridhar Swami's commentary to me once personally, actually. I was in Srila Prabhupada's room with another devotee named Mahamsa Prabhu. And Mahamsa Prabhu had also come from quite a respectable family in India, Parsi family. Well established in business. And so Srila Prabhupada was saying to the two of us that you have left your families to surrender to Krishna, but actually you have done the right thing. And then he quoted the verse, Guru Nasasyat, Pitaha Nasasyat. And he gave these examples that the duty of the guru is to deliver the disciple from the repetition of birth and death. But when Sukracharya instructed Bali Maharaj not to surrender to Krishna, which is the way to become liberated from the cycle of birth and death, he disobeyed him. But it was not a fault, because Sukracharya was not a real spiritual master, because he was not delivering his disciple from birth and death. And then he gave the example of Prahlad Maharaj, that when Hiranyakasipu, when Nrisingadev attacked Hiranyakasipu, Prahlad did not take any action to defend his father. It's the duty of the son to defend his father if his father is attacked. But Prahlad did not do that. But still, he was not at fault, because Hiranyakasipu was not a real father, because he was not helping him to progress in Krishna consciousness. To the contrary, he was impeding him. It is the duty of the son to obey the orders of the mother. But when Kaikeyi ordered her son Bharat to sit on the throne of Ayodhya, he disobeyed. But it was not a fault, because Kaikeyi was not acting as a real mother, because she was not helping him in devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada was encouraging us that, you know, you left your parents, but they were not real parents, because they were not encouraging you to become liberated from the repetition of birth and death. true parents would be happy if their children became Krishna conscious. Our devotee parents, if they're actually devotees, they want their children to become devotees. Because the parents are realizing the benefit of Krishna consciousness, relishing the happiness of Krishna consciousness, so naturally they want their children to be happy. They don't want them to have to come back and take birth in the material world again and suffer in so many ways. So, the Bhagavatam describes that Bali Maharaj hesitated, considered the gravity of the situation, but ultimately he rejected Sukracharya because he was not a real spiritual master. And Bali Maharaj is one of the 12 Mahajans, one of the 12 great authorities in Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada says that he became a Mahajan because he rejected his false spiritual master. There's another verse in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that says that the guru should train the disciple in such a way that ultimately the Lord gives himself to the disciple. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, yayatam mam prapadyante. As they surrender to me, I reciprocate accordingly. So if we surrender everything to the Lord, if we give everything to the Lord, including ourselves, the Lord will give himself to us in reciprocation. So the 11th canto, in discussing the duties of the spiritual master, says that the spiritual master should train the disciples in such a way that the Lord will give himself to the disciple. In other words, he should train the disciple to give himself, him and everything he possesses, to the Lord. That's the duty of the spiritual master. Sukracharya did just the opposite. He said, don't surrender everything to the Lord. So, after rejecting his false spiritual master, after Bali rejected his false spiritual master, Vamana expanded himself. And that gigantic form with one step covered the whole upper portion of the universe, and with the other step covered the whole lower portion of the universe. In other words, with two steps, he'd already claimed the entire universe. So he said to Bali that you promised me three steps, but you've only given me two steps. You did not keep your promise. So now I'm going to punish you because you did not keep your promise. Anyway, it's a long story, which you all should read in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. But in the end, Bali Maharaj said, no, my lord, I did not break my promise. You can keep your third step on my head. In other words, he surrendered himself. And this is called Atmanivedana. Offering oneself, surrendering oneself, giving oneself. And Atma can mean body, it can mean mind, it can mean self or soul. And in the nine processes of devotional service, one is Atmanivedanam, self-surrender. And Bali Maharaj is the example. And because he gave himself fully to the Lord gave himself to Bali Maharaj. And he agreed to become his doorman. He gave him a planet. He gave Bali a whole planet called Sutala Loka. And he became the doorman. That means he became the servant of his devotee. In the material world, at least superficially, the master is always the master. The servant is always the servant. It's not so common here, but say in Africa, the people who could afford it would often have domestic servants, you know, to clean the house, to maintain the garden, to drive the car. So the master was always the master and the servant was always the servant. It's not that the master said, okay, well, I've been master long enough. Okay, now you be the master, I'll be the servant. The master is always the master and the servant's always the servant. In the material world or the relative world, but in the absolute world, the Lord, who's the supreme master, sometimes becomes the servant of his devotee. He's always the master, ultimately, but he likes to be the servant of his devotee. And so Bali Maharaj, because he gave everything to Vamana, so Vamana reciprocated, he gave everything, including himself, to his devotee, to Bali Maharaj. He became his doorman. And it's described in Srimad Bhagavatam that when the great demon Ravana was conquering the universe, he came to Sutala Loka, and Vamana Dev, as Bali's doorman, gave him a kick with his lotus toe, which had also pierced the coverings of the universe. And that kick was so powerful that it sent the great demon Ravana all the way across the universe, to the other side of the universe. So this is the beautiful relationship between the devotee and the Lord. And therefore, in conclusion, Srila Prabhupada says that one who gives to the Lord is not the loser, but he gains by millions of times. And Srila Prabhupada sometimes gave himself as an example. He said that when he was in household life, before he surrendered everything to Krishna. He had 5 children, and there were always so many problems. But after he surrendered everything to Krishna, he got 500 children, and he loved them, and they loved him, and there were no problems. The one who surrenders to Krishna is not the loser, but he's the gainer many times over. Another example took place after Srila Prabhupada had begun the movement in America and had established his headquarters in Los Angeles, same temple we have now, New Dwarka. But at a certain stage, Srila Prabhupada felt that he had to leave New Dwarka and return to India. And he thought that, you know, it was such a nice facility, by far the best facility in the movement at the time. But then Prabhupada, you know, returned to India and began the preaching there, and then eventually established the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan. And at the time, Srila Prabhupada commented that he had prayed to Dwarkadish, Rukmini Dwarkadish, he prayed to Dwarkadish that, why are you kicking me out of your temple? Why are you kicking me out of your temple? You see, but Prabhupada said, now I see that he has given me a place that is much better. Krishna Balaram Temple in Vrindavan. Of course, on the absolute platform, there's no distinction, but still. And Prabhupada said that the Lord never takes anything away from a devotee except to give the devotee something better. So sometimes it does happen that the Lord will take something away from us, but we should consider that to be the Lord's mercy. And we should see how the Lord wants to give us something better by taking away something lesser. That is also the Lord's mercy. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna says, Yasyaham anugrinami harishye taddanam shanai. Yasyaham anugrinami. That when I want to show mercy to a devotee, the first thing I do is I take away his material opulence. So this could sound like a horrifying prospect, but actually it is the Lord's mercy. If he sees that a devotee is sincere to serve him, but at the same time has some material attachment that is keeping him back, that he's unable to give up on his own, then the Lord, out of his mercy upon the devotee, will take away the material attachment. So the devotee is free to surrender fully to the Lord and engage fully in the Lord's mission. And Srila Prabhupada saw the same thing happening in his own life. He had been, in his householder life, he had been a very successful businessman. But gradually, his business started to fall apart. And finally, the situation came to a climax when Prabhupada was away on a business trip. His servants plundered his office. He took away all of his stock and just completely ransacked the premises. And it was such a heavy blow to the business that the business was unable to recover. But Srila Prabhupada thought of that verse, Yasya Hamanugrinami Harishyeta Dhanam Shanayan. He actually mentioned it to one of his god brothers, that maybe this is what's happening to me. Maybe this is what Krishna is doing to me. For me. And then eventually, and Srila Prabhupada said that before, that earlier, he was dreaming that his Guru Maharaj was coming to him and asking him to follow him, to take sannyas and follow him. And Srila Prabhupada would wake up, it was like a nightmare for him. He would wake up and he would think, how can I leave my wife? How can I leave my children? How can I leave my household? But one of his god brothers told him that, you know, if one really wants to preach, he must take sannyas. So when gradually Krishna took everything away from him, he took it as Krishna's mercy, that now I can dedicate myself fully to the order of my spiritual master, the mission of my spiritual master. And later, Srila Prabhupada commented that in the beginning, Krishna tested me by taking everything away from me. And later, Krishna tested me by giving me everything. And actually, for a devotee, he only wants to serve Krishna. He has no other desires. So if Krishna takes away everything, all right, he'll serve Krishna without anything. And if Krishna gives him everything, all right, he'll serve Krishna with everything. But he's the same either way. Whatever he has, however much or however little he has, he'll use it to serve Krishna. But in this discussion in the eighth canto, although it's emphasized that when the Lord is merciful to someone, he'll take away his material possessions, the final conclusion is that when the Lord is really merciful to someone, he will give the person that spiritual strength that even in the midst of material opulence, he has no attraction for material enjoyment, but he will use the opulence wholly and solely in the service of the Lord. And that is, it is Krishna's mercy to take away a person's material attachments, but the supreme mercy is to bless the devotee with such spiritual strength and power that even being given all material facility, he will use the facility only for Krishna's service and not for sense gratification. And that is really the Lord's mercy. And that was the case of Srila Prabhupada. An astrologer had predicted that he would become the richest man in India. And years later, Srila Prabhupada commented that that no one's wealth could compare to his. You know, even the Birla family, which was the richest in India at the time, you know, Prabhupada had like 108 temples, 108 palaces all over the world. And he had so many servants, and not just ordinary servants, but European servants. Like it's very prestigious, like for an Indian to have a European servant, that was like the height of prestige. And Prabhupada had hundreds and thousands of servants. He didn't have to pay them anything. And European servants. So Srila Prabhupada said that, you know, even the richest man in India, his wealth couldn't compare to Prabhupada's. So that is the Lord's mercy, when a devotee is so pure that he can accept any amount of facility and not use it for himself, but use it exclusively for Krishna. But he's still niskinshana because he doesn't think it's his. He has no sense of false proprietorship. He personally feels he has nothing. It's all Krishna's, and he's just accepting it to use in Krishna's service. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Chandranandana Prabhu.
Where did you say the pastime of Vamana seeking Ravana was from?
I believe I read it. It's the whole past. It's not like a elaborately described, but I believe I read it in the fifth canto. That Ravana came to Bali Maharaja's door while he was in his mood to conquer the universe, and Vamana gave him a kick, sent him across the universe. Yes.
Krishna is saying that Vishnu.
Yes.
And Mahavishnu, I guess when he's on the physical side, all the universes come out of his powers. So each universe, if I understand, is ruled by one Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma. Each universe. So now, just to understand the expansion.
Okay, that's a good question. Actually, if you see on the wall, there are many lovely paintings by Prabhupada's disciples, and under each one is a caption which explains what's in the picture. So on the far left here, there's a picture of Mahavishnu. And so what you said is true, that from his breathing, when he exhales, so many universes come out of his pores. Then Mahavishnu, who is also known as Karanadakshai Vishnu, he expands as Garbhodakshai Vishnu. And that Garbhodakshai Vishnu resides within, there's one Garbhodakshai Vishnu within each universe. And he lies down in the Garbhodak ocean. And from his navel sprouts a lotus flower. You can say from which Lord Brahma is born. And then Lord Brahma engineers, you know, the creation of the planets within the universe. And then Garbhodakshai Vishnu expands and becomes Kshirodakshai Vishnu. And Kshirodakshai Vishnu is the super soul, Paramatma, within every atom, within the spaces, within the atoms and between the atoms and within the hearts of every living entity. So these are the three Purusha avatars. Yeah, Vamanadeva is an incarnation of Vishnu.
In this universe.
Yes, Vishnu incarnated as Vamanadeva. Yes, in this universe. Yes?
This is just yesterday's discussion. I just want to say I really like when you talked about our individual parts, mm-hmm. We have our individuality, and that Krishna wants to fully enjoy with every single individual personality that's part of him. And it really made me feel in my heart that, you know, it's really nice to know that Krishna wants us back, in the sense that, you know, he can't fully enjoy without all of us there as a part of him.
Mm-hmm. Well, since you mentioned that, I have two things to say further related to both yesterday's discussion and today's. This verse I quoted today, Guru na sasyat, Pita na sasyat, no one should become a guru or a father, mother, husband. It suggests that these figures, natural figures of authority, are meant to be God's representatives. And God has unconditional love for all of his parts and parcels. Well, that suggests that these natural figures of authority are meant to have unconditional love for their dependents. And if they do not have unconditional love for their dependents, it is a sort of breach of their relationship with their dependent. And because hardly anyone is acting properly in positions of authority. The whole world is destroyed or disturbed. The whole world is disturbed, and people are traumatized. People are traumatized because their natural authorities are not acting properly. You know, they're violating their positions of authority, their positions of trust. And it really creates a traumatic experience. So it's a but still, when we come to the real authority, when we come to Krishna, you know, we should understand that, you know, yeah, I did have those bad experiences, but I won't have the same with Krishna. You know, Krishna will not let me down. The other thing I said about, this is shifting the topic, but I said about individuality, because the devotee was afraid if he surrendered to a guru, he'd lose his individuality. So I made the point that we retain everything, but we give preference to Krishna. You know, that, you know, I might like, you know, well, say I like pizza from a shop, but I can't offer Krishna pizza from a shop. So I give preference to what Krishna wants. You know. So Srila Prabhupada expanded this principle that Krishna likes Radharani. I mean, Krishna likes Radharani, so all the other gopis, they're thinking, okay, Krishna likes Radharani, so we'll push Radharani forward to Krishna, because Krishna likes her the best. And we want to please Krishna. Krishna likes her the best, so push her forward. Arrange for Radharani to meet with Krishna, because that will give Krishna the greatest pleasure. And the devotee's happiness comes from Krishna's pleasure. So by giving Krishna the greatest pleasure, the devotee also experiences the greatest happiness. Like Srila Prabhupada told the story of a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who, it was a very hot day, so that disciple was fanning Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and maybe Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself remarked, like, aren't you feeling warm? And the disciple replied, no, by fanning you, I feel cool. And many cooks have commented, like Yamuna Devi, like one of the most famous cooks in ISKCON, that when you cook for someone else, you know, cook for your spiritual master, cook for other devotees, you don't even feel like eating afterwards. You're just so satisfied cooking for them. You don't even feel like eating. You just want to serve them and see them satisfied. And that makes you feel satisfied. Yes?
Nice example of further elucidation of how Mali Maharaj got everything. Explain that standard of opulence and happiness is greater than Indra's on the heavenly planet. And even after he leaves Sutala, that life is over, he'll become the next Indra, getting Indraloka back.
That's right. That's right. What Vijayananda Prabhu said is correct on both points, that the opulence of the planet Sutala was even greater than the opulence of the heavenly planet of King Indra, which Bali had occupied. And furthermore, Vamana gave him the benediction that after his duration of time was over in Sutala, and he, because Indra is a post, like Lord Brahma is a post, that then Bali would occupy the post of Indra. You know, he would get the post of Indra, which he had won by conquering over that Indra. So, Vrijendranandan and Prabhu is giving further elaboration of how Vamanadeva reciprocated Bali Maharaj's surrender and fulfilled his desires more than he could imagine, like Prabhupada said. By giving everything to the cause of the Lord, one does not lose anything, but he gains everything that he could never otherwise expect. Yeah, this is a very subtle question. At what point did Bali Maharaj realize that Vamana was actually Vishnu? Because that was the idea. At first, he thought, he's just a Brahmin who's come to beg, and I always give in charity to Brahmins. But he may have felt some special attraction for him that he didn't feel for other Brahmins. He may have had a sense that this was not an ordinary Brahmin. So when Sukracharya said that he was actually Vishnu, he didn't doubt that he was Vishnu. He just didn't want to break his promise. And he didn't mind surrendering everything to Vishnu. You know, in a way you could say Vishnu cheated him. Because Vishnu asked for 3 steps of land in the form of a person whose 3 steps would cover this much. So he asked for 3 steps when those 3 steps would be this much. And then after he agreed to give 3 steps, he expanded himself to the point where with 2 steps he covered the whole universe. So you could say that Vamanadeva cheated him. But he was happy to be cheated by him because the Lord is absolute. So whatever he does is all good for everyone. So even if he cheats us, it's for our ultimate benefit. And so we should surrender to whatever it is. I'm not remembering it exactly. One devotee recently told me the story that he came to the temple just to try it out. It was like in the maybe 60s or 70s. And So after he came, like, I don't know, he's going to spend a day, spend the night, see how he liked it. You know, one of the devotees said, well, you know, your hair is really pretty long and won't look good to the people who come to the temple. So he was just going to, like, give him a little trim, and he completely shaved him up. Completely shaved him up. And he was, like, so embarrassed, so humiliated, he felt he couldn't leave the temple because he couldn't show himself to the world all shaved up. So he stayed and he became a full-fledged devotee, took initiation and became happy in Krishna consciousness. So, yeah, generally we are advised not to cheat, but, you know, if Krishna's cheating you, then better to surrender, because Krishna's cheating you is for your benefit. No, he's not cheating. He's just creating a situation where he can give you more. That's correct. All right, thank you very much. Shrila Prabhupada, please.